Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
This president must be impeached, and he must be removed, not because he has been offensive or because of policy disagreements. Impeachment is necessary because this president does not believe the law applies to him, because he poses a clear and present danger to our democracy.
If anyone is guilty of abusing power or obstructing Congress around here, it's the Democrats, not the president. This is the most corrupt, rigged railroad job I've seen in my entire life.
In terms of tariffs on products between the U.S. and Mexico, this is not that much different from the NAFTA. The big difference here is the labor enforcement mechanism. It appears at this point that there will be some sort of independent counsel that monitors Mexico to make sure that it is upholding the labor standards.
I want to personally apologize to those customers who were affected by that error and explain how we will make you whole. It is our responsibility to do better, and you have my commitment that we will do better.
If you confuse the two, the criminal accusation with the political removal process, you upset and you destabilize our system of government in a way that is very significant.
Joining us to talk about another week of impeachment activity in D.C., the new head of APS answering questions from regulators and more are Marcus Delartino, a partner at First Strategic, and former congressional staffer Roy Herrera. Guys, welcome back.
Thanks for having us.
So, some stuff going on in D.C. this week, even just earlier this morning. Marcus, the House Judiciary Committee, in a surprise to absolutely nobody, approved two articles of impeachment along party lines against President Trump. Now moving on to the full House, what do you make of all? I'm assuming you listened to all 14 hours of debate yesterday. So what do you make of what we've heard over the last week or so?
You know, I did. I was glued to the television for every moment. I keep saying this, and it's anticlimactic, but here's where we're going at the end of the day, is that the House is going to approve this, and it's going to pass, but it's going to be a dud in the Senate. As Mitch McConnell so aptly pointed out, I can't find the 67 members to vote for impeachment. So, I'm stuck. I keep saying this, but I think we all have wasted a monumental amount of time in passing bills that have to do with healthcare, with defense, getting an actual budget done. What most people don't understand is we've been running on a continuing resolution, not an actual budget in Congress. And the next due date for continuing resolutions coming up here, December 21st. And I think that is going to play. There's going to be immense amount of politics with that continuing resolution because of the timing as it coincides with this impeachment.
Roy, there is a lot of talk, especially from Democrats, about understanding, I think, probably that the Senate is not going to vote to convict and remove the president, but that if they didn't impeach President Trump, that he would continue to do the stuff that they say he shouldn't be doing, and it would sort of set a precedent for future presidents to be able to do that kind of stuff. Is that an argument you think that resonates with voters?
I'd like to believe that. I mean, I think it is, like you mentioned, the reality is that the Senate is probably not going to actually remove him from office. But given the, as we've seen in the investigation, the I think very serious allegations and really bad behavior by the president here, it's important to not only bring that to light and conduct the investigation and show the public what he did, but also say that it's not okay, that we shouldn't have presidents, for example, that are soliciting foreign interference and trying to investigate political rivals, that's just not how American government should function. So regardless of what happens in the end, I do think it's important to make that point and get everyone on the record on how they believe that's going to go. And I think it's, it is going to go to the Senate. McConnell had some comments yesterday about how they're going to run it. He basically said they're going to run it however the president wants the trial to be run. But I think even that is an important thing to show the American public about what Republicans believe is right and what is the rule of law according to them.
So let's talk about the Arizonans on this committee that voted this morning. We have three on the Judiciary Committee: Greg Stanton, Debbie Lesko. There's also, of course, Andy Biggs, who has sort of emerged yesterday as a pretty prominent figure from the GOP side in terms of slowing down these procedures and arguing on how the procedures are carrying out. What do you make of Biggs here, Marcus?
It's the same Andy Biggs I'm used to seeing. It's Andy Biggs from the state legislature, right? And that's what he's good at. That's what he's always excelled at. And that's why he's a point man, not only on the committee, but he's the leader of the Freedom Caucus. And that's a role that, you know, I think he enjoys. I think the role is sort of made for him at this point. What I do find interesting, and this is a little bit in the weeds, is why does Arizona have three members on the Judiciary Committee? We should have somebody on another committee. Maybe it's agriculture. I don't care. But we, you know, get some national defense money rolling into Arizona.
Yeah, a third of our delegation is on that committee. Does it? I mean, does it matter? Do people in Arizona, you think, is it like kind of like the Major League All-Star game where like you watch to see your players, your team's guy get an at-bat or something? Like, do Arizonans care that they have members on this committee?
Well, for Arizonans like Marcus that watches 16 hours of pitching, then I think it really matters. I mean, yeah, it is a little bit of inside baseball to know that your own member or the member from your own state is on the relevant committee here. I think their actions, the three Congress people that are on the committee, are basically what I predicted. I mean, the Republicans are protecting the president. Their arguments are mostly about process and arguing that the process has been unfair in some way to the president. And then, of course, I think Congressman Stanton has made a point that I agree with, which is, you know, that his behavior, his actions here are worthy of impeachment. So I mean, everyone's kind of playing along party lines. We saw the vote play along party lines, and I think everyone's actions has been that way. I think generally where your member is as far as the committee goes is not that important, although sometimes it is very important because, you know, being a state that has a lot of agriculture, for example, you do want people on those kinds of committees that affect things that are very material to Arizona.
I just chime in to say that what guys like Roy and I are going to be looking at is the polling in the next few days about how voters, what their trends are, how they feel about the process, because that seems to change almost on a daily basis. But, you know, in addition to that, people should know at this point, about 17% of America doesn't have their mind already made up of who they're voting for in the next presidential election. So there's only 17% up for grabs here. And how is that 17% that's movable influenced by this process?
Where do we stand now in terms of polling? Like, how is this playing in Arizona? Is it strictly down party lines? We say we have an independent streak here. Are we seeing that in the polling on this?
You know, it's too early to tell, frankly. I mean, now's the time. Now that we've had the vote, moving forward is the time to be able to tell how that's sort of influencing the electorate. And by the way, that can also change. You know, polling is a snap in time. So it's, you know, just how you feel about that moment, not how you're going to feel 10 days from now. And so, you know, that can all change at a moment's notice if the Senate decides to do something. Or it could change if the Senate decides to do nothing. So, you know, I think it's split. Probably around 50-50 right now, but I expect that there's a trend to start develop over the next couple weeks.
And that's pretty close to what we've seen nationally, roughly 50-50 support, oppose. Roy, let me ask you sort of a philosophical question. In terms of the inner workings of government have been on display on national TV, on the radio here for a couple of weeks now, with all of the arcane rules and language and everything. When people actually stop and listen or watch the government actually functioning in real time, does that affect how people think about the government or how it works or the people who are in it?
Well, I mean, you like to believe that your government is functioning and in functioning in a way that benefits you. And, you know, we've seen the disapproval of Congress be very low even before this impeachment, because I think a lot of people feel like Congress is not doing their job. You know, this has been a political exercise, a civic exercise that we've gone through the last few weeks on impeachment. I, as someone who's kind of a political nerd, kind of love this stuff. I mean, I don't love that we're going through this, but just, you know, seeing how government works in this context. But, you know, at the same time, we are so partisan now, especially, you know, the members that are there, that I'm not sure we really get sort of the way it's supposed to work. I'm not sure, for example, we're looking at things as objectively as we should, because we're all looking at things through our own partisan lens, which I think is an unfortunate thing.
Yeah, Marcus, you've obviously spent a lot of time watching, for example, legislative hearings. You know, I've sat through a lot of those as well. Do you think people react to actually seeing what's happening as opposed to just seeing the results in the end?
I don't think people are as tuned into this as we would like to think that they are, right? You know, Roy and I might geek out and watch for hours upon hours on CNN or MSNBC
all
or Fox News. Or C-SPAN probably be the best
or
option.
Or you could listen on KJZZ.
Oh, yeah, right. Sorry, KJZZ. What was I thinking? But most people aren't. They're sort of tuned out. And frankly, a large part of it is a product of our life now, right? We're sort of controlled by these phones that we carry everywhere, and everything's twice as busy as it used to be. It's just hard enough to sit around the dinner table with your family, much less sort of be intensely into this impeachment hearing. So I think we overestimate how much the public's tuned in.
Does that play into how this polls and how this comes down in term in political terms as the vote happens and as this trial happens in the Senate, in terms of people are just only watching to a certain extent and are going to vote with whoever they liked before this all started?
Well, a little bit. It's a race for messaging at this point, right? Mm-hmm. How much of that small tidbit of a message can I get to you before you to influence your opinion? And that's what's really going to be happening. And you know, Congress goes through and analyzes what they're going to say in a microphone before they actually do it and how it polls and how people react to it. And that's exactly what's going to be happening in the next few weeks.
I mean, I would say, you know, just as a kind of a counter argument to what we've been saying, though, is we had seen a shift in polling on support for impeachment in the direction of being for impeachment since the beginning of this process. So for whatever reason, there are more people now that are supportive of impeachment than they were. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a majority of Americans, although I do think that the polling averages says basically it's a plurality of Americans that support it. So we're not at 50%, maybe we're at 48%, but still at the beginning of this process, I think it was in like the 30s. Mm-hmm. So something has changed. I don't know if it's because they believe that the behavior of the president is so egregious or because they've been paying attention more, but something has shifted.
That is former congressional staffer Roy Herrera. Also with us, Marcus Dellartino with First Strategic. With Lauren Gilger, I'm Mark Brody in Phoenix. You're listening to the Friday Newscap. More of the conversation right after this. Good morning. You're listening to the show on KJZZ in Phoenix with Lauren Gilger. I'm Mark Brody. We're in the midst of the Friday Newscap. Our guests today, Marcus Dellartino and Roy Herrera. So, guys, we spent a while talking about impeachment, but that was not the only highly anticipated hearing of the week, at least here in Arizona. The new head of APS, Jeff Gollner, went before the Arizona Corporation Commission this week. And, Marcus, he came out with an apology and an offer to customers who were harmed by a faulty online rate comparison.
Yeah, I mean, wise choice to go in a little humble. And APS is in the sort of the midst of making some change within the company. I think there was an accurate point that you have to change the company culture there. And I think he's committed to doing that. That's what I picked up. But at the same time, I think that this Corporation Commission needs to give Jeff an opportunity to lead. You wanted change at the company. You have change at the company. You have somebody who's committed to making that change, at least from what he said on the record. And now I think it's time to give him that opportunity and prove that he can do it, but hold him accountable for those changes.
Well, what's the balance there? Because obviously the commissioners had a lot of questions other than this rate tool. They want to know about why APS has Don Brandt hanging on as a consultant. They want to know about political spending going forward. So what's the balance between letting Gollner lead and do his job and sort of get his feet steady, but also making sure that they're getting answers and having issues dealt with the way that they want?
Yeah, well, I mean, keep in mind, he's been in office for about 5 minutes, I mean, comparatively. And so it's so pounding him right out of the gate, I don't necessarily think it's fair. I understand that they've done some things in the past that are not helpful. I completely get that, and I agree with customers' angst, especially, you know, I get it. But the point is that you got to give him 5 minutes to get his feet under him and start making those changes and then ask him those questions, because I think he's going to make drastic changes in political spending. I think he's going to make drastic changes within the PR department. I think he's going to make he clearly knows that this didn't go well for APS, and he's interested in moving the company forward.
Roy, at the same time, though, some activists and advocates for consumers don't want the commission to I don't want to say they don't want to have the commission give him time to get his feet under him, but they want to make sure that APS is not allowed to, in their mind, get away with what the company has gotten away with in the past, right?
Right. I mean, I think, you know, it's going to take a little bit more than just an apology. It's going to take more action, I think, to get APS past the sort of prior controversial activities like their political spending, for example. So I think, you know, having him apologize is a step in the right direction. And it's unusual because we don't see that much from APS executives. But at the end of the day, he's going to be judged with what he does now that he's in charge. And I think, you know, it's kind of a wait and see thing. I mean, if he is going to change the culture there and the behavior there in a positive way, then I think people will respond positively. If it's just going to be words, then, that's going to be a different story.
So I spoke with Commissioner Justin Olson on the show earlier this morning about this, and he was pretty impressed, he said, by Goldner and by the approach that he's taking, the fact that he is, you know, talking to regulators. That didn't happen for a very long time with his predecessor, as we know. But at the same time, he said, you know, more needs to happen here. He's calling for an audit. He wants to see this opened up to all customers in terms of getting reimbursements if they were on a bad plan. Do you think more needs to be done, either of you?
I think we're all saying a little bit of the same thing, and that is the old Reagan line of trust but verify. And I think that that's where this is headed. You know, yeah, they've got to be held accountable. There's no doubt. I think we're seeing that change in corporate culture. But if that does not come to fruition, you're right. The Corporation Commission should bring down the hammer. But I'm hopeful that this is part of a sea change, and they're going to see the results.
Well, I mean, one thing to think about there, too, is the voters are going to have a direct say on what this looks like and what the commission should be doing with APS and, you know, other entities that it regulates, because there's three seats up next year. And so we'll see sort of how the behavior of the company is over the next year. And, of course, the commissioners, and then the voters get to decide.
All right. So let's talk about the 2020 election, since you brought that up, Roy. Segue into my next question. A couple of polls out this week looking at both the Democratic presidential primary, the preference election. I'm sorry for Secretary of State out there. Also, the U.S. Senate race. Let's start with the Democratic race for President, Roy. And let me ask you, because nationally we had seen Elizabeth Warren kind of leading a lot of the polls. She's sort of slipped back in some of the polls over the last couple of weeks. In Arizona, it looks like at least at the top of the pack and, you know, tightly compacted up there, Joe Biden and Pete Buttigieg, two moderate guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think Joe Biden has largely stabilized. I think Mayor Pete has surged. And so now we have, I think, what is essentially a four-way race to you would call moderates and two sort of progressive liberals. You know, the polling that you're referencing in Arizona shows the president is still underwater. I think it's like 50% disapproval rating. So he's still in trouble here. I think everyone recognizes that next year is going to be very competitive at the presidential level, particularly, I think, if it's one of the moderate candidates like a Mayor Pete or a Biden. This is going to be a battleground state, and, you know, whoever wins, it's only going to win it by a point or two, I think.
Yeah, Marcus, do you think Republicans would be more concerned if Buttigieg or Biden wins Arizona and maybe takes the nomination as opposed to a Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren?
There is no doubt in my mind. I mean, not even a question. You know, I think if Biden is the nominee, and I'll tell you what, especially, and this is a little inside baseball too, if Biden comes forward and says, look, I'm only going to serve one term. And set the stage for an incoming new younger candidate to come in and follow in my footsteps, then I think it's lights out. I mean, we've got a
in Arizona or Republicans, around the country.
I think around the country, and I think Republicans have a real problem. I don't think he'll do that, but if it is a Bernie Sanders, you know, it puts Trump in contention. I think it's a foregone conclusion in Arizona. I think under that scenario, Trump wins. But nationally, I think it gives Trump a real run at it.
What do you make of Buttigieg and his surge and polling this well in Arizona?
You know, it's surprising, but here's what when I turn on the TV, I'm seeing two ads right now, and that is Tom Steyer and then the mayor of New York,
Michael Bloomberg.
And they've got massive TV buys going on in Arizona, which tells me Arizona is a throwdown state for the both of them, that they're throwing up a wall in Arizona. So I expect a lot more money and a lot more activity out of those two in the coming months. Question is, how much momentum does Mayor Pete and Joe Biden have coming out of those earlier primaries? So coming out of Iowa, coming out of New Hampshire, South Carolina, and coming into
Nevada.
Arizona. And so Arizona is, in my geeky political opinion, is in a fun spot coming into this race, and we're going to have a whole lot of activity. And if you're in the media business after this is over and you don't get a Christmas bonus, something is wrong, because there's going to be a lot of money spent here.
Other than public radio, of course.
Of course.
So let me ask you about the U.S. Senate race. The same polling company found that Mark Kelly, the Democrat, still ahead of Martha McSally, but by a slightly smaller margin. Does this sort of confirm what everybody has sort of been suggesting, which is that this is just going to be a really, really close race as it was last year?
I think so. I mean, it is going to be a close race no matter what, because that's the nature of the state. I think it's, you know, the poll, I think, is generally pretty bad for McSally, because if you're an incumbent and you're down at this point, that's not it's not a good place to be in. But certainly it's going to be very competitive. And I think it is, you know, in some ways going to be affected by what happens at the top of the ticket. Like Marcus said, I mean, if Biden is at the top of the ticket, I think that makes things a bit easier for everybody down ballot. Whereas if it's Bernie, that's a different kind of story. But regardless, it's going to be a very competitive race, just like we saw last time. To Marcus's point, we're going to see more money spent on all of these races than we've ever seen before, because Arizona is such a national target.
What do you think, Marcus?
I thought what was most interesting about that poll is this break in conventional wisdom that having a woman candidate therefore attracts women to support you. And, you know, Martha McSally's from that poll is bleeding significantly with women. And so it sort of breaks that old political theory in half. And I don't think at the end of the day, remember, the campaign hasn't really started yet. We haven't seen Mark Kelly isn't up on TV. He hasn't defined himself. Well, he has defined himself in the sense that he's an astronaut and a former Navy, et cetera, et cetera. But we haven't seen the TV commercials yet, and I think we've got a long way to go. I don't think it'll be as close as people may think. I'm going to be the outlier on this
one.
I think it. I think the public's going to go one way or the other, and it'll be a little wider margin than we think it might be.
Are you willing to say which way you think they'll go?
I'm going to get in a lot of trouble for saying this. You know what? I won't. How about that?
Okay. Well, you'll just get in trouble with us for not saying that.
Okay. Right.
That's fair.
I think who you're leaning towards is the candidate that I support. So I'm going to just say that. But to Marcus's point, I mean, this race and a lot of these races, just like last time, are going to be won, I think, in the suburban areas of Phoenix and Maricopa County. Mm-hmm. And we see that vote where there's pretty strong support, female support for Mark Kelly. If that holds, then he's in a tremendous position going forward. And I think it will, given his background and the kind of things that he's talking about.
All right, guys, just about a minute or so left. A little fun story that came out this week. Governor Ducey is putting his home up for sale. I assume you both have offers in at this point after
I'm taking like 8
tours.
Million short on it.
I was going to ask you for the 8.
Well, I would say we could have a member drive for you, but I'm not sure that's going to work. There's been a lot of sort of scuttlebutt about, what does this mean the governor's doing? Is he going to move to D.C.? Is he going to go somewhere else? He says he's staying in Arizona. He's happy in his job, which is what he said all along. Is this just something, like, are people just looking to find something where there really isn't much here, Marcus?
Yeah, I really believe that. You know, he's no different than 90% of my friends right now who are all going through empty nest syndrome, which is something I completely don't understand, but I will in 15 years. And when you get to that point and there's only the two of you rolling around in that big of a house, you want to downsize. I mean, I tell my wife all the time, when this chaos is over, we're going to go buy a 2-bedroom condo and go travel the world. Not really going to happen, because as I've been informed, you have to have a house to come home for Christmas and a bunch of other stuff. So I'm going to lose that argument. But I think it's as simple as, look, we don't need this big of a house anymore. And when you're a dad, you know this. That's a lot of upkeep for you.
And a lot of repairs.
Yeah. You want to fix less stuff.
Nice photos, though.
Very nice photos. Now, I assume by 90% of your friends being like them, 90% of your friends don't have $8 million houses.
That would be correct. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. I meant empty nesters.
About to be empty nesters. He obviously, I think, does have national ambitions. I don't think that means he's leaving Arizona, though.
All right. That is Roy Herrera. Also with us, Marcus Dell'Artino. You've been listening to the NewsCap. Guys, thanks for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to the Friday NewsCap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at the show@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.